last time. I'm just going to kind of go through some of the main points we talked about in each lesson. If something gets brought up y'all have a question on, or something's been bothering you about something I said over the whole course of time, then now's the time to hash it out. It's like a marriage, don't go to bed angry, supposedly. So if you have questions, now's the time. First, we started off with Moses, and then we kind of got into our Joshua story. This is where Joshua gets introduced. It's when Moses sends the spies into the promised land. We talked about the report that they bring back is the land is incredible, and they walk out with a branch with these fruit clusters that are ginormous, and the people are starting to get excited. But then the report they bring back about the people in the land is that they're giants and there's no way they can take the land, so they don't decide not to go into the land, even though that's something that God has promised them, brought them to the edge of the promised land, done all these miraculous things. They get into this position and they're overcome with fear, and their fear keeps them from following God's plan. Make sure I don't skip ahead. But we talked about a little bit in that story how oftentimes what God gives us is good, is sufficient, is better than anything we could dream up ourselves. He's not a God that's withholding. He's a God that desires for his children. That's the promise. Into something better than any of us can imagine. And these people have an opportunity to take part in a slight opportunity at a promised land, at an earthly version of it, where the land is good and it provides. And they get into this position where their fear takes over. But we like to look at it and we say, oh, well, it's the same. I love repetition in the Bible. And this is the fall narrative. Is Satan talks to Eve and saying, hey, can you really not eat of any tree? She's like, well, it's just the tree in the middle. And she sees that it's good and tries to take hold of it. And she does, and then that's when we have the fall of man. But we see, this is opinion and speculative, but it's an opinion based on the narratives that repeat in the Bible. I think probably the garden was more beautiful than any of us can imagine. I think the fruit that God provided was probably also pleasing to the eye. There's just something. saying that it's going to make me like God. It's going to give me wisdom of knowing what's good and what's evil. Hey, that sounds pretty good. Hey, maybe that would be better than where we're at. Did any of y'all ever... Ignorance is bliss. Right? It just reigns true in this story. Where they want what? They want knowledge and wisdom of what's good and bad. Boy, I bet they wish they did not take that step.
They never tasted bad.
Right? And then they figured out. They have this moment where they're kind of blinded. They're bubble wrapped. They're walking in this beautiful place. And they have one command. Well, I guess a couple. But the one not to do. And they chase it and they pursue it because, hey, that sounds pretty good. And I guarantee they look back and go, oh, man, what did we just do? Then we have that in this story. And what do they do right after that God pulls them? Go ahead.
See, I actually identify them with the Israelites at this point because you just left Egypt. Well, not just, but you left Egypt. You just spent 40 years in the desert. And you've reached the promised land, right? You can see it. And it's been hard. And then I'm just like all of us, me, you expect it to just be available and easy. And I think it's like when the spies go out and they're like, yes, it's all here, but there's other people here who don't want to give it up. It's the reality that it's still going to be hard. And so I can see the apprehension of their Israelites. Like, going through a life, you kind of at some point just kind of wake up some days and go, man, I wish it was just easy. I wish it would just, didn't have to make any major decisions. I didn't have to worry about X, Y, and Z. Didn't worry about paying whatever bills. And the reality is, it's not that way. And I think so. As much as it is easy for us in retrospectively to look at the Israelites in this situation and go, well, God commanded it. Well, God commands me to do a lot of things every day that I struggle to just get out of bed and put my feet on the ground at times. So I can understand that. It doesn't make it okay, right? But I think it's more of a story of like, yeah, you did go through all that trials and tribulations and you have worked really hard. You have been out in the desert eating manna and all this other stuff and struggling. And even though you have now arrived, it's not going to be any easier. And we see that all the way through Joshua.
Thank you. That's a great point to make because that's also indicative of our walk with Christ. How many of y'all got baptized and thought things were going to get easier? Right? You think the Holy Spirit, you're like, I'm going to have the mark of the Spirit. I'm going to walk through life. And then you realize... Oh man, it's just as hard, if not harder, because now I have the mark of the Spirit, which means I'm probably a target for Satan. And so they walk up, great point, they walk up, and out of this, they're probably thinking to an extent, I've been through the hard, now it's time, right? We're knocking on the doors of the promised land. And then how disheartening it would be to sit there and the spies come back and you kind of have that, it's the, do you want to start with the good news or the bad news question, right? You kind of have that where they start with, hey, it's all there, right? Here's the fruit we took out of this place. It's flowing with milk and honey. And then, but the people are gigantic. This isn't just going to be a cakewalk. We made it all this way, and guess what? Potentially our hardest challenge is there before us. Right? Because they walked through pretty, not easily, but without war to an extent. They haven't had just these major battles that they're looking on this established group of people behind fortified walls and cities. And that's a daunting outlook. And so thank you for bringing that up, because we do that all the time. Is I keep hearing Dad say that it's going to get easier. Just kidding. I hear him say for himself that when he retires, it's going to get easier, but it's not. But there's just things that we set these goals in our head, and we think, oh, it's going to get easier. The gym, Jason's in the gym every morning. And in your head, right, you're thinking, oh, this is going to get easier over time, right? Not necessarily. If you're pushing yourself, if you're doing all these things, and then guess what? You have a go to Vegas trip for 5 days, and then you wake up the next morning, and you're like, boy, I do not want to go back, right? It's everything that we try and tackle in life is, I haven't heard a story of it gets easier until you're dead, right? That's when things hopefully get easier. You're in a place without sorrow or mourning. But as far as life goes, even for God's chosen people in this instance, to something that they have been promised and expect, it doesn't get easier. Matter of fact, we can start moving on and see that cycle unveil itself is right after this. It's God judges rebellion. We have three stories of rebellion right after this. Where, guess what? Right afterwards, God's people do what? They say, hey, let's do what we should have done in the first place, and let's go try and take over the land. So they do it on their own without God. Then they figure out how hard it could potentially be, right? Most of them get slaughtered in that instance. And then you have these rebellions back to back afterwards. And Moses is still part of this whole deal, but you have the Korah's rebellion and the fiery serpents, where these people kind of, they rise up against Moses. And they, again, take away this place that God has put Moses, and they take that away from him and say, hey, why are you the guy? Why is Aaron the high priest? Why? And Moses is like, hey, let's let God decide. And God chooses and shows that he, in fact, put these people in their respective places. And so you have this judgment that God brings, and then God prepares the way. Finally, we start getting back into the promised land when Joshua, the torch is going to be passed to Joshua. Then they go spy out the land again, and they have Rahab. And Israel crosses the Jordan. But then we have, again, They defeat Jericho, right? They get in this place and they defeat Jericho, and walls crumble down. And then the very next story, again, what was God's command in that instance after they defeat Jericho? What were all the goods and the riches? Where were they to go? The house of the Lord. And you have someone withhold that.
He finds something that's good, and he wants to keep it for himself, and so he hides it. And the Lord's wrath burns.
And they go into the next battle, and they go, hey, this isn't a big town. Let's just take 3,000 of our men. Let's not take all of them. Let's take a few of our men, and let's go. And then they get squashed. Like 36 of their men died, and potentially more after that, because it says they keep pursuing them. But they get squashed, and then they're right back in that spot of, hey, right? They're going, you just crumbled the walls of Jericho. You just gave them into our hands, and then we go up to this next place, and we're feeling pretty good about things. And we get squashed. And then they realize, hey, someone, one of the people amongst you has kept things. And this is where we get into the the gruesomeness of these stories that's often overlooked, that is uncomfortable, but I think it's meant to be uncomfortable. You're meant to wrestle with both sides of God. The Bible is very intentional. How it's written, how it's presented is very intentional. And so I don't think that these things are put in there just for like a, hey, also this. I think it's meant for us to struggle with, to wrestle. Because what does God call the people to do? To, it's Achan. I can find it again. For some reason, I'm thinking. No, it's the Valley of Achor, but it's Achan. I'm pretty sure. Achan. Okay, perfect. Valley of Achor. They call it that because what does God call him to do to Achan? Him, his family, all of his livestock, everything. They burn all of his possessions and they stone the family. Oh, that's uncomfortable. That's gruesome. And I think it's a story put in place so that we wrestle with the fact that God called his people to do that. Because in our heads, and again, the story is, he steals, they go to Ai, they get slaughtered. Joshua's like, hey, God, kind of that reaction of, hey, what just happened? And he said, someone amongst you has stolen from me. And then they cast lots, and they narrow it down to tribe, to family, to who it was. And then he goes to Achan, and he said, what have you done? And Achan's response seems fairly just in our eyes. He goes, man, I've sinned against God. I'm sorry. And then the response was him and his family and all of his possessions getting stoned and burned. Whoa. Now, let's try to put that in the character of God in picture and in line with how God presents himself to be. Because the response, in my opinion, seems just. Because if I admitted that I did something to my father, usually I got punished less. Right? If I admit, hey, yeah, you got me. But also, let's keep in mind that it wasn't admitted up front. Lots had to be cast all the way down to this guy. So, flip side, if I did that to my dad, I'm like, guilty till proven. Or innocent till proven guilty, right? If I made him go through those steps. Yeah. And I think that's the part that we sometimes miss in this. But then we still have this giant thing to wrestle. And it's the other side of God. Because who likes to spend time on God's mercy and grace? All of us, right? Because that's why we're here. That's why we have opportunity at heaven. We also don't like to look at the side, is the just side, and why some people are going to go to hell. Because that's uncomfortable. But you can't read the Bible and come away with this picture of, hey, it doesn't matter who you are, what you've done, and everything, and how many times you reject God, and if you just reject God all your life and you're never gonna follow him, then yeah, you're still in. The whole Bible, narrow is the way, right? In the parable of the it's in Matthew. I think it's in two of the gospel books. But it's the parable of the wedding feast, and everybody gets invited, and they're provided these garments, and then the head guy's walking around and he sees a guy that's in his party, but he's not wearing the clothes he was given. And he's like, what are you doing? Throw him out. Get him out. Why have you come to my party not wearing my clothes? Many are called, few are chosen. Over and over and over biblically, we hear this fact that, hey, it's for for everybody, but you have responsibility in your relationship with Him. You can't live despising God, turning your back on God, not following God. You can't live not recognizing God. You can't live all these wicked ways and just waltz in. Because God is holy. He's separated. He's different. He can't stand to look at sin. So if you're not covered with the blood of Christ, what's He looking at? Sin. And guess what He can't be a part of? Sin. You'd have to come to the party. You have to come clothed with Christ. And we see that over and over and over biblically, is that this thing that we have to wrestle with could also be the thing that's pushing us in the right direction. There's fear, there's respect that comes from this, but there should be an adoration of who God is, because also the only reason that we have a chance to take part in this, in this heavenly, eternal kingdom, is because God is who He is. Is because God is not changing or wavering. Because if He was, He would be just like any other deity that's worshipped in the past. I don't know. I was intrigued by Greek mythology, so I took several classes on it. And boy, you want to talk about, I mean, the Greek gods act just like humans. They fight, they quarrel. The earth is supposedly born out of destruction, and people were raised up as servants, just to serve in whatever manner they deem fit. And all, I mean, it's just like a bunch of uber powerful humans. Nobody wants that. And so if we don't give both sides to God, we're missing the whole God picture. The reason why He's different. I'm gonna do this because I thought I was preaching today, so I did a quick lesson yesterday. Y'all are gonna get a little bit of just what I've been reading. And it fascinates me, and it falls in line with what we're talking about. And I have it pulled up just because I thought there's a chance that I might be preaching today. So y'all are going to get it. And hopefully fast. In 9 BC, there's an edict and a decree that comes from Caesar. And it gets passed out. And I want y'all to hear some of the verbiage of this. Because it's called the inscription of praying. And so this decree gets passed out from Caesar, and it gets passed out all over the kingdom of Rome. And I want to read it because this is what people back then were accustomed to. And I think if we apply it to what we do today, if we apply it to what goes on, it looks a little bit differently, but the root of it is still the same. I want you to hear the verbiage. Decree of the Greek assembly in the province of Asia, on motion of the highest priest Apollonius, son of Menophilos of Azonoi, whereas providence that orders all of our lives has in her display of concern and generosity in our behalf adorned our lives with the highest good. Augustus, whom she filled with virtue for the benefit of humanity. We're talking about Augustus. We're talking about Caesar. And it's saying how one of their gods has put Augustus in place. In our behalf, adorned our lives with the highest good. Augustus, whom she filled with virtue for the benefit of, not Rome,
humanity and has in her beneficence granted us and those who will come after us a Savior who has made war cease and who shall put everything in peaceful order. And whereas Caesar, when he was manifest, transcended the expectations of all who had anticipated the good news. This is gospel. It's not that there wasn't other things to buy into. There has to be something different. Because in this edict that was passed on all across Rome, just a couple years before Christ was born, we have the same language as the gospel. The word, the good news, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce it in Greek, is the same word used for our gospel. And so in this town, it was a merchant town. They were on the coast, they were on the bay, so trade passed through them. More than likely, definitively, there was Jewish families that got this decree. And the whole decree is that they're going to change the new year. They're going to shift the year. And the new year is actually going to be on Caesar's birthday. And so what they were probably thinking in that moment is, oh, it's another Caesar that wants to be important, right? Because this is something that happens. They're not just unused to it. But I want y'all to see the language. See, the language that was used is there's this Caesar that has been put in place by God that was manifest. It doesn't say he was born and born to whom. It was manifest by one of their gods to bring peace to the earth. Bring peace to people and bring good to Rome. And what are all the Romans probably thinking? All right, that sounds pretty good. The thing they miss is they're following a Caesar, a providence, a Greek god that historically has no investment, no skin in the game, no desire for relationship with people. And that's the story of our God. See, people are getting passed around good news today. Who's excited that Trump got elected? Right? A lot of people are like, hey, that's the good news, right? Good news, right? When you wake up, good news, Trump got elected, right? We're putting the words of the gospel, the good news, on people all around us. When something happens, it's good news. And we just put all these humanly things, and we're using gospel message words. We're forgetting the good news. Because guess what? Jesus was born a few years later. And then guess what? About after he's born, 50 years-ish, this same town gets delivered a text. And it's Matthew. The gospel message. And it sounds a lot the same, but a lot different. You have the Son of God that knew, and they would read these texts on the Sabbath. There would be people reading these texts, or just in the synagogue in general. People are sitting there reading these texts. And people would stop and listen. And they're listening to this good news get presented when they just recently kind of had this same thing happen. And so people have to weed out and figure out, hey, what's really the good news? Because they're kind of talking about similar things here. I tell you what's different is the Roman good news is saying, hey, good news for Rome. This Caesar's going to bring peace to the empire. This Caesar's strong and powerful. That's about where it ends. good for Rome. You're going to have a great life under this Caesar. Then this new message gets brought, and guess what it is? Good for everybody. We have a chance at relationship and eternal life. Boy, that sounds a little different than what they've been hearing. That sounds a little bit different than the decrees that are delivered by the Roman Empire. That sounds exciting for hopefully everybody. But just like, oh man, just like we do, have to say, we gotta weed through some of the junk. Because we're getting presented with all this stuff that this is great, that's great. We get so wrapped up with what's going on here that we forget the bigger picture. Which God's decree came shortly after that. Christ came shortly after that edict. And that carried a much more powerful message. Something talking to us about eternal life. Something talking to us about bigger promise than peace here. In fact, Christ talks about peace in a different way. When we read through Matthew, it says, I did not come to bring peace, but the sword. And that's the uncomfortable side that we have to deal with, right? That there will be peace, yes, for some who are a part of his fold. But it says, I came here to turn brother on brother, to turn father on son, in-laws on in-laws. That's not just a super fun thing to read. But the promise was much grander in what Christ brings than what the Caesar of Rome brought. Augustus Caesar. Same time frame, same timeline. A lot of people heard them both. And there's promise. There's probably Jews sitting in there listening to this. And what are they waiting for until Christ is born? A Messiah. It sounds just like what they've been promised, but they have the understanding that, hey, this guy's not even a Jew. It's not going to come from him. And it hopefully put a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth. That the same words, the same message that they're waiting and longing for a Messiah, the same message that's being passed around, and they're waiting, waiting, waiting for a Messiah is being used by Augustus Caesar. And they finally get into this spot where Christ comes and a lot of them miss it. Right? Not saying it's not understandable because they had a completely different picture. But guys, we have the most amazing message to share. Way more amazing than changing the calendar to where the New Year's on Caesar's birthday. A promise that's a whole lot bigger than, hey, Rome might be at peace for as long as this guy stays alive. Something that's not fleeting. That should be exciting. I imagine Romans were probably over the moon excited when they heard this. Because it provided a glimpse of temporary hope. We're bought into so much more than a glimpse of temporary hope. That should be passed on just as this gets passed on. I mean, this is one of the earliest inscriptions. It's sitting in a museum. I forgot where the museum is. But Oh man, Peter went overkill on that one. He's tired of me talking. He's sleeping back there. But guys, we should be hearing this. Spreading it, sharing it. It should be way more exciting than the adjustment of a calendar. It should be presented with energy and excitement because we understand and we know that this promise is way bigger than hopefully a good 4 years under Donald Trump or hopefully a good 30 years under Augustus Caesar or whatever good news that gets brought to you. Because people get told about the good news all the time. Just like they did back then. It may look a little bit different. It may be in smaller pools and shorter time periods. But if we're not presenting the actual good news, some other good news is going to take its place because people buy in